It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And the reason Len is laughing, and I am also kind of half laughing, is because we were just talking before the show about how bleak everything is looking. On the bright side, though, tomorrow's Friday. Are you golfing tomorrow? You usually golf on Fridays in the summer, right?
Yeah, Willow Valley, if you ever heard of that place.
Nice. Yeah, I had a friend who worked there for a long time. She liked it there. It's good.
It's one of the better courses around, and I get an absolute steal. It's funny, the deal I get, I'll even say it, I don't really care. It's a seniors rate, and we go in, and I just don't show up in your clubhouse. And I get the seniors rate.
Nice. That's great.
Love Willow Valley. Thank you.
I like that. God bless Willow Valley. Sending business their way. We got a lot to cover tonight, including late breaking-ish anyway. The story really broke yesterday, but the think pieces, including one from Mr. Mark Jeftovic, and
we got seven stories.
Yeah, it's a busy night, but there's a lot of stuff going on, man. So we have a lot to talk about, and I think all this stuff is important. We'll talk about the usual stuff first. The quote of the week from last week: you can motivate an idiot, but all you're going to get is a motivated idiot. That was from Jim Rohn. I think it's probably Rohn, R-O-H-N. No one got it.
No this relation to quote, Jim Rohn, by the way.
No. Rohn is not burning, so don't worry about that. The only person you are destined to become is the person you decide to be. If you know who that was by, put it in the comments. Don't forget, you can only look for the answer in Scholastic book order flyers from 1999, and any other texts are forbidden. If you get it right, your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Well, where do you want to start? Seven stories, like you mentioned here. I'm going to close some tabs up top because I know we're going to be swerving around, and I have some secondary notes here that I want to look at while we're doing the show.
Yandex.
Sure. Okay.
Yandex. Yeah. Let's talk about that. I didn't know what Yandex is before this. I have to admit my ignorance. Well, it's boundless, by the way. I'm just going to state that. But Yandex, I did some research on Google. It says that it's a Russian technology company that operates a large search engine, a web browser, and offers a wide range of internet-related products and services. It's one of the larger Russian tech companies out there. So that's what Yandex is. Meta, we already know what the heck they are all about. And we have some allegations that both Yandex and Meta are exploiting loopholes in the Android's browser to app communication. And that protocol, by using that, they're able to, well, de-anonymize the Android users, their web browsing activities. And they've discovered that tracking codes have been embedded by Meta through their Metapixel and Yandex through their Yandex Metrica. And this has been impacting millions of websites out there that could cause browsers like Chrome. And it could send unique identifiers to native apps on the Android devices. Mm-hmm. Metapixel, for people wondering what that is, that used to be called Facebook Pixel. And Metapixel is a small piece of JavaScript code placed on a website to track user activity. And this allows for companies to link web identifiers like cookies, for instance, to mobile app users. And this makes things less anonymous when using private browsers, like private modes on browsers. And of course, this is a huge problem for people that like security. And you should deal with it by using a better browser than Chrome, like stuff like Mullvad browser, Tor browser, stuff like that is more secure. But with respect to this, Google has stated that the behavior displayed by these two companies violates the terms and conditions set up by the Play Store marketplace, and also the expectations by Android users. It's killing them. And so there's a lot of abuse and a lot of potential abuse that could take place. Meta has responded to this, saying that they're going to stop this feature altogether. It's too bad. It took somebody to discover this for Meta to actually react. It should have been proactive, never have done this in the first place, but whatever. Yandex also says they're going to be dropping this practice, but who the heck knows what they're going to be doing. They said they were doing this to improve personalization and make it better for the end user, personalize the experience, not collect info on people. Yeah, right. Yeah,
gun them down with one-click ads. A couple of noteworthy quotes in the article. I'll read one here. Any browser doing block listing will likely enter into a constant arms race. That's the cat and mouse game we talk about a lot. And it's just a partial solution. Valina Rodriguez said in or of the current mitigations, creating effective block lists is hard, and browser makers will need to constantly monitor the use of this type of capability to detect other host names potentially abusing local host channels and then updating their block lists accordingly. That is to say, this is extremely cumbersome and heavy to pursue from the block side. Other thing to note, not observed these behaviors in iOS so far. iOS not as free with their permissions, not as free with their tracking, and makes a point of putting those options right in front of the user pretty early on in the phone experience. So as soon as something wants to track you across apps, it tells you right away with a pop-up ad. It's not a navigate to settings. It's not a navigate to another app to make the change. It's do you want this to be allowed, yes or no? And obviously, you know, you should be picking no. Not to say that it won't eventually make it to iOS, but so far, Android only. Bad news, man. You know, personalization is code for advertising, and everyone knows that. That's the most generous interpretation. Like you mentioned, though, Len, that data could go anywhere. And if you listen to this show, you know that it has gone anywhere and everywhere as soon as it gets collected. Stay safe, man. Get off your phone. Start using your Motorola Razr. Pull it out of the box. The battery's probably still better than the iPhone battery anyways. So you may as well switch over.
Usage out of that. And
yeah,
what is the T9? What is it? The
T9 texting. Yeah,
predictive text. I could still do that in my head. I could just, you know.
I only had a T9 phone for probably, I got my first phone when I was 18. I probably got my first iPhone when I was 23. So 5 years of T9. And actually, even for the back half of that was when we started to see BlackBerries and sliding keyboards. So yeah, maybe 2 years of T9 max. I had a much music Motorola phone and a Razr, and then after that I was off to the races.
I had a solid 10 years using a T9, so it's now wow. Second nature to me. It's just anyways,
maybe you do deserve that senior discount. I don't know.
I think I do. I mean, you know, I'm gonna pay it regardless whether they like it or not. I'm gonna
that's
pay
right
it. It's a great that's deal right. By the way, thank you very much. Texas, the great state of Texas, may not be
formerly
so great after
formerly all. Great state, yeah.
It's a new law that came into it, well, that's in the past. It's going to be effective January 1st, 2026, and it's going to mandate digital IDs for accessing the App Store application. And this claim is that the legislation will provide additional protection for minors requiring age verifications for users under the age of 18. And so now the onus is on Apple and Google to administer this, and it's going to be done through how? Well, even more data collection is going to be done. Not that they haven't already collected enough data. Now they're being mandated to have to collect even more. And that's terrible on its own. But with respect to this, there's going to be a constitutional challenge. And I don't know how this can survive it, because the First Amendment guarantees fundamental freedoms to all Americans.
Yeah.
Right. And this seems to be going against that. So this is going to be set up for a constitutional challenge. I suspect, my limited knowledge, it seems like it's going to be a successful challenge. So this probably is just more fluff than anything else. But the fact that they've passed this, it's like things are trending in the wrong direction everywhere. It's Texas of all places. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know.
What can you say about this? We've talked. How many times have we talked about digital IDs for internet access over the last, I don't know, 18 months, 12 months, probably once a month at least. There's either a follow-up on a story of some jurisdiction trying to pull this off, the, you know, opening salvo from some sitting government trying to, you know, implement a digital ID for web access under the guise of, like always, protecting minors. It's BS. What other ways are to describe this? You know, by the way,
we're at a loss for words now, by the way. I think
exactly. Like, and don't get me wrong on this. I am pro 2A. Like, I am pro gun ownership. I wish I owned a gun myself. I'd like to eventually own one, have a PAL license. How can any Texan lawmaker say that in what is probably the gun capital of the world, the thing they need to do to protect minors is require digital IDs to access the internet? How do those two things jive? You know, the sort of devil's advocate would say, well, these two things are unrelated and one shouldn't be compared to the other. And digital ID is meant to protect minors from online harms. Where have you heard that before? Well, you know, guns have their own safety regs and people should follow them, blah, blah, blah. Fine. But, you know, I would say that what this does is remove agency from parents, number one. I think it forces agency onto young people, number two. And I think that it invites further dystopian legislation down the road. I mean, what is the long run benefit to individuals of digital IDs? There isn't one. So, for people who think it's a matter of convenience or, oh, I already basically have a digital ID, I put my credit card number in everywhere. However bad you think you have it now in the digital birdcage that you're in, it's going to get worse. I promise you that if you go down this road with digital IDs, and we'll talk about some other stories here tonight that, you know, also have me feeling bleak, but this is a bad one. I'm glad to hear there's a constitutional challenge, and I think the American spirit will prevail here. But, you know, Len, even the mightiest, you know, boulder with a drip of water will eventually become sand over a long enough period of time. And that drip is intensifying, I think, in the United States in a way that many people are not appreciating at the moment.
Well, here in Canada as well, because on a very similar note, we have Bill S-209. That's titled the Act to Restrict Young Persons Online Access to Pornography Material.
Fuck.
What a name.
I sorry, Mark, that I swore, but like reading these stories, man, is like, it's bad for my mental health. Anyway, continue, please. Bill S-209.
What a name. And that's a 5 out of 5 name, by the way. Right? Like of Bill names, like, incredible. Anyways, this is aimed to, very similar to the last one, to protect young children.
Same senator, online. By the way, Mivelle Duchesne. Same senator, Julie Mivelle Duchesne, is the same one who put the other online harms bill. Went on Michael Geist's podcast. I recommended you listen to it then. I will recommend again you listen to it now. Anyway, sorry, I keep cutting
there's some
off,
improvements that are in this one compared to the other one. Now that senator, okay, just for your information, appointed in 2018 by then Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
Yes,
so she is a liberal senator. She is a former journalist and broadcaster with Radio Canada and spent 25 years as the public affairs correspondent for CBC.
So laughable. Okay.
So there you go. And furthermore, the Liberal Party has a very strong majority within the Senate. I think they have 95 out of 110 seats.
My
numbers could be very close, but in terms of passing a bill in the Senate, the Liberals will have very little resistance. It's going to get done. So with respect to this bill, it's going to make the ISPs, the internet service providers out there, responsible for enforcing the age restrictions and blocking access to certain content for young folks out there. And how is this done? It's going to be more costly for ISPs to administer. It's going to be more burdensome for them. And, you know, they could try to do whatever they want, but there could be ways to bypass it. But it could also make it difficult or impossible to get to legitimate websites.
It's just not about it's not about any of this. Like, it's about like decency and private behavior. Like I should be allowed to look at whatever PORN that I want without anyone telling me I have to show ID or do any of this other stuff. Okay. The same way that parents should be able to talk to their kids about this and have their kids access the internet in a way that that makes sense for them. And, you know, Len, I look at this and all I see is another shot at online privacy. That's all I see. I got to show my ID to go to a PORN site. I don't want to say the word because we'll probably get, you know, demonetized or whatever. But they, at the end of the day, these things, the problem is multi-pronged, okay? It's the privacy issue. I think you would have said this if I didn't keep cutting you off, but I'm sorry, I can't help myself here. The third parties administering these controls are honeypots. They've proven to be incompetent over and over and over again. We talked about arms races earlier in terms of security. These guys are constantly in arms races and they are losing every step of the way. And, you know, Len, there's a big difference between what should be accepted by Canadians and what is best for the sort of, you know, disadvantaged class. And so in this case, yeah, kids are probably being exposed to pornographic material regularly, frequently. I know for me, and actually I was talking to my wife about this the other day, I may have even said this on the show, there are times when Instagram, for me, will go from, you know, cooking videos and like physical rehabilitation videos and weightlifting and stuff about like video games to girls dancing in bikinis. It'll happen all of a sudden and it'll stay that way for like a week. My YouTube algo almost never does that. But my Instagram one, it happens a lot. And so like these companies are telling you that they're going to make sure kids don't get access to certain websites and certain content, but it's really all they're exposed to. I heard not long ago that Snapchat started like a browser side, not a browser side, but like a browsing feature similar to YouTube Shorts or Instagram Reels. And that's all basically softcore pornographic material. Teenage girls bouncing around in bathing suits and cheerleaders and, you know, scantily clad artists doing music videos, whatever, right? You know, there's no attempt to block these things. There's no attempt to block brain rot. There's no attempt to block information that is like clearly not true. There's no attempt to protect kids in any other way except the ways that require everyone give up one of their key freedoms in terms of browsing online. Why is that? Why is that always the case? Why is it always the case that the worst possible outcome for everybody happens to be the best possible outcome for the small disadvantaged group? This is the thing we should be concerned about. Not, you know, well, they're being exposed to this material, that material. That's a smokescreen, man. It is. It's dishonest. And Professor Geis has done a bang-up job on this. We'll talk about him again later. But there's people out there with experience and rationality and a voice that are trying to sound the alarm on these things, and they're hitting a wall because Canadians are just like on the whole stupid and comfortable and uninformed. And they don't see that this could go sideways, even though literally every time similar things are tried in terms of the revocation of freedoms or the placement of government eyes into the private life, even though every time that's tried, things go awry. This time will be different, certainly, according to these people. There's a reckoning coming for Canada that's coming faster and faster. And we'll talk about another reason why I think that. But your private life is not private anymore. And I'll talk about another reason why I think this is the case when we talk about the Strong Borders Act. But for me, this is extremely detrimental. And everyone should be up in arms about this immediately and firmly and strongly and loudly. Or you will lose this battle.
You could be
protest.
I just discussed that the Liberals have a majority, very strong majority within the Senate. The Liberals proposed this. They're not going to turn us down in the Senate. In the House of Commons, they have a quasi majority in that the opposition doesn't seem to want to put any resistance whatsoever towards the Liberals. So something like this, you can protest all you want. It's going to go through. This is going to become a law.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we talked about in the past was that the conservatives supported this legislation too. The thing is, like, you can't... Why don't we pause here? We'll do the Strong Borders Act, and then we'll talk a bit more about why all this stuff is interconnected and why it should be concerning to you.
I was hoping to talk about this AI. I mean, we need something a little bit more...
You want to go that way? Okay, sure. We'll tie a bow on this. We'll come back to why I think this is something important. Let's go to AI.
We got to laugh. Like, this is the point of the show that we got to at least give some comedy.
Some levity here? Okay.
Yeah. This is the first, by the way. I don't think we've ever received this story from LinkedIn before. I mean, I think this is the first time. Anyway, this is just a beauty of a story because it highlights the collapse of this Builder AI. And it's a startup that was once valued at $1.5 billion with a B. Mm-hmm. And they raised quite a bit of money, $500 million from major investors like SoftBank, Microsoft, Qatar Investment Authority. But now the Builder AI company looks like it's going to be, well, going belly up because it's facing insolvency and laying off the employees. These guys are not artificial intelligence. They claim to have been, but they were just relying on Indian developers that would manually write code. They was basically just a bunch of Indians at computers.
Actually, Indians, you know, like the
incredible stuff. And it just reminds me of like the story of Nikola, where they had that Carter showcasing how great it is, but it's really just gravity that's working.
This Rivian. That was Rivian, the pusher.
Was it Rivian?
The pusher. That was a great story.
Anyway, it was all just trashola. So the CEO of the company and the founder, Sanchin Dev Dugal, you know, this guy's playing the long game on Deception because he's been going at this for 8 years. It's not like he's just started this recently. This guy's been doing this, and he's have had employees in India doing their thing for 8 years in total. Incredible stuff. A lot of big companies got duped, and somebody made some good money. This guy Sanchin did. Great stuff.
How did this go for 8 years?
It was simple. They had enough people on the other side getting a request and processing
them. I am in disbelief that for 8 years this guy could carry this out. And by the way, when people talk about the AI bubble bursting, it's not because the LLMs are just using autocorrect to finish your sentence. It's because some of the biggest and most competent investors, SoftBank, Microsoft, get duped by stuff like this. What else are they getting duped by? Do you really trust Microsoft to produce a good AI product when this is what they're investing in? Do you really trust SoftBank to do a good job producing AI-related businesses, you know, through their Golden Egg or whatever program, their Vision Fund 3, whatever they're doing now?
Good.
The demo,
when they were
asking
questions, you know, what's better, you know, is it street food or going to McDonald's? And they always came up with street food.
So right? Weird, yeah.
There's always bias towards that for some reason.
All meat is street meat if you follow the timeline long enough. Anyway, yeah. Right,
let's go to this border protection stuff.
We better.
Yeah. Bill C2. You know what? These guys, they start off right away. The second bill they're proposing. And the first one, by the way, is the throne speech, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, this is the first one.
The first bill. So it's a lot of goodies in this. You know, like if you want to start transacting in cash, and if it exceeds $10,000 in value, well, that's now going to be a criminal offense, right? Like, it's funny. They'll pay us in this money. We could use it in small denominations, but as soon as we exceed a certain amount, it's not legal. Okay, that's fine. And also in this, they could go through people's mail as a way for protection, just to make sure that everybody is up and up and there's nothing going on. Like, it's mail. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, this is personal information. Anyways, the bill allows for the police to go through that, or even Canada Post. Also, the installation of spyware on a phone. And this happens without any consent from the end user. It could just simply end up there in some tracking information and everything. Why? Why do they have to have additional stuff? And they're doing this at a whim. They could do this however they want. We've seen just a few years ago what happened in Ottawa. Yeah. And there was a heavy-handed approach in which the government dealt with people over there. And the courts ruled that to be too heavy-handed approach. But at that point, it was too late. Those people were impacted negatively. So the same thing could happen here. They made it decide, you know what, we're going to install some software on your phone without you knowing, by the way, that's going to track you, what you're doing, how you're doing it, and who you're doing it with. And what are they going to do with that information? They could use it against you. And at the time that the courts may decide, well, this is wrong, it's too late. You've been impacted. Years of your life is gone. Trust has been lost with your friends, and you've just been impacted. And mm-hmm. The last but not least from Bill C2 is ISPs and the amount of effort they're trying to tell them that they have to tap into your data, the ability to look at what you're doing. Look, using a VPN is now going to be prevalent for a lot of people out there. There's lots of good VPN options out there. Take a look. Personally, I use Mulvad as one, but there are probably others that are just as good. Just do your own research. There's a lot going on with this, trending the wrong way. If you think things are going to go any better in the next few years in Canada, I got a bridge to sell you because I don't think it's going to be like that.
This is a big concern for me. And it's in the same vein as the other story we talked about, the Online Harms Act being reintroduced by Senator Duchesne Melville, I forget her name, Julie. This is something called lawful access. So lawful access is at this point almost a 30-year-old legislative concept where there's an understood agreement between a patron and a business or a patron and a company, you know, whatever, that the business that patron does with the company is protected by privacy laws. For example, the ISP does not ever have to produce without a warrant information about where you connect to the internet, how you connect to the internet, mm-hmm. and you know, what you do while you're on the internet through their service. Mm-hmm. Lawful access is an attempt by law. I don't want to say by law enforcement because I doubt very much law enforcement's asking for this. The government's asking for this. It's an attempt to circumvent 90% of that process. So for example, you go to a bank, and you say, does this person have an account here? Do you have transaction history? How long is the transaction history? What's on the transaction history? Without actually getting a printout of the transaction history. Okay. So they've done 95% of the work with 0% of the diligence and checks and balances being upheld and relied upon during that process. The other sort of important thing, I think, is that, you know, as you mentioned there, you can use VPNs, but the problem is this has in it something called, where did I see this? It has something called dun, 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 a global production order. What does that mean? It means that the RCMP or law enforcement are able to force record production from global companies who provide their services in Canada, Mulvad, for example.
But they don't do anything in Canada. That's everything that's abroad, and it's all running.
No. You're misunderstanding me. Are you in Canada? you are. And do you use the service?
Yes.
Yeah. And do you use the service?
Yeah.
Okay. Then they can ask those guys to produce records under this law. Whether they do it or not is a different story. But they're allowed to do it. And
sure.
So this is difficult. And you know, when you have these sorts of broad sweeping orders, it's easy to see the rationale for wanting something like this, whether it's online harms or something else that forces digital identification to access the internet, whether it's stuff like this. I think the thread that ties all this together, while there are some, you know, sort of fun legal discussions to be had about the nature of the bill and the nature of other bills like it, the thread that ties all this together is that there is a growing danger to the state brewing in private conversation. More and more people are able to talk about what they're seeing in terms of their day-to-day life. They're more and more able to talk about how to evade the clamps that are coming down. I think in a lot of ways, you know, as a consequence of state policy, not necessarily intentionally clamping down on people. But for example, you know, we should be buying Bitcoin and getting out of fiat. Why? Because fiat's a game you can't win. And so you want to be buying Bitcoin instead. Well, is that dangerous to the state? Not if 100,000 people have Bitcoin, but if 35 million Canadians have Bitcoin, it's a big danger to the state. And so there's going to be an attempt to track private conversation, private barbershops, let's call them, where you feel like you can say things that you wouldn't normally say in places where you're obviously recorded and obviously held accountable for what comes out of your mouth. I'm thinking specifically of schools, workplaces, and the like. These private conversations in the past have been, you know, held by people who had means and were already taking care of their business in a way that was unfriendly to, you know, tax regimes or unfriendly to social mobility issues or whatever. But now they're taking place everywhere at all times. And the most obvious example of this is what happened during COVID. It's the one that's freshest in everyone's minds. And it's the one that makes the most sense to me to share. And I only am thinking about this because I actually talked about it last night on CBP. Everyone in their place of work, at their family get-togethers, at their schools, at their PTA meetings, places where communities form ideas and get behind those ideas, it was frowned upon. You become persona non grata, honestly, in a lot of ways. If you ever said, I'm not going to get the vaccine, neither are my kids, because I don't think it works, and here's the data, you weren't allowed to say that. But in private, everybody was talking about it. Whether they were saying that the people who didn't want to get it were wrong or that they were right, whether they were reviewing the data or saying the data was not good, everyone was talking about these things behind closed doors. I think that turned out to be the nail in the coffin for the mandates. You know, the trucker convoy obviously started from those conversations. I think a lot of the rebuke of those mandates around the world started in these private conversations. And there was an attempt to find out who was having these conversations, what the conversations were about, and here in Canada, whether or not they could be charged for organizing these types of things during those conversations. Private communication is more dangerous to the state than ever before. And there's no doubt that as we move through the rest of this decade and into the 2030s, the attempts coming from the monoliths around the world, tech companies will be participating, slapping hands like happy circus seals at every opportunity to partner with governments, trying to make sure that all private conversations are easy to corral, easy to record, easy to monitor, and easy to prosecute. And I don't think there's any other way to view these legislative actions at this point. I can't imagine that there's any other true intention besides that. And you should be afraid of that. It wasn't enough to put an Alexa in your house and a camera on your doorstep. It wasn't enough to trace all your text messages. It wasn't enough to get into Signal and Telegram. Now it's literally at the level of the ISP. What websites is this person going to? Are they going to, Steve Bannon's website? Are they going to the Trump subreddit? Are they going to, are they visiting the MolVad website to sign up for a VPN? Where are they visiting? What are they visiting? When are they visiting? And who are they?
What's the counter to that? If you want to prevent this,
there isn't one. Is the problem? There isn't one.
So it's, you are saying, and I agree with you, but I'm just trying to see if there's any way that this could be stopped. You see no way for something like this become a reality.
How can they? Oh, I think it's going to become a reality for sure. Yeah. I mean, everything else has gone that direction for a decade now. And the number of places that you can be monitored, in the legislation, talking about installing apps on your phone, opening your mail, talking to your ISP. I mean, they can already talk to your bank. Your credit card statements are public. You're like, what's left? What is your private life? I mean, shit, even if you have an Alexa in your bedroom or an iPhone in your bedroom, is your pillow talk even private? Like, what privacy do you have left, man?
Nothing.
Nothing.
It's gone.
If this happens, it is over. And this is a mask-off moment.
If you see a joke that somebody doesn't like, and it could be just whatever you're saying.
Yeah.
Anything can be used if it's taken out of context. Anything.
Yeah.
And that's could be really problematic. So like, I think you've correctly pointed out it's no stop. Like, I would like to think of a way how things could improve, but I can't.
I can't. I just don't. 100%. I don't know. I don't. To the ISPs, maybe I'll start using Starlink. Like, honestly, I would consider getting a Starlink if I thought that Rogers and Bell and all these companies were just giving my data up because I, visited a website that says inflation is actually 10 times what the government tells me. Like, where's the line? The fact of the matter is, without due process, there is no line. And you don't get to defend yourself. And this is not democratic nation behavior at the end of the day. People want to be free. The inability of the state to adjust to digital life is not an excuse to clamp down on every single keystroke and connection that comes from my computer because I may not share the views of the state at every turn. That's not an excuse.
You know what's a similar story? Because we could sidestep into the next one, which is the Palantir story.
Palantir's, I'm a Palantir. Right. I'm a Palantir stockholder. For, I have a lot of Palantir stock.
I don't want to hear that. Yeah, number one. I know. But number two, that they're partnering up with them, that the US government is partnering up with them as a way to collect data and have a master database on people. Like, and it's not just for immigrants, it's not for criminals, it's for everybody. Like, why do you need this? What's going to be the purpose of having it? How will be used? Just it's another thing that you're looking at. It's like, what's going on here? The company Palantir, do you trust them to do stuff in your best interest?
No.
And if they're working alongside the US government and given almost carte blanche to collect information, at least ways to collect information, I almost trust Google more, and I don't trust Google at all. Like, whatever. What could I say? At least with this story, there's the companies. It's accompanied with a lot of the drama between Trump and Elon Musk today. So, at least there's some comic relief. But if you scratch the surface, it's pretty pretty crappy, this Palantir story. Again, it's just, it's more encroachment on people's rights, their privacy. What could be done with this information? I don't know.
What is there to say about the Palantir?
Exactly. Not
Palantir
much.
Is like, yeah, it, you know, they are a, they're one of the, what I call like tech defense stocks. The reason I invested in Palantir a long time ago is because they had tons of government contracts. I think I bought that stock when it was like $19. And, you know, I thought to myself that government contracts just work for defense. And if you think that warfare is heading to the digital / cyber battlefield and off of the you know, desert sands of the Middle East, then this is the stock for you. Now, what I didn't think about when I bought the stock was just how fat and SSRI addicted every American male would become, and so they can't have a ground war even if they wanted to, unfortunately. But these guys have been a defense company for a long time, and Peter Thiel, he makes no bones about the importance of data and the importance of data in warfare and the importance of being able to predict the future based on, like you said there, you know, a sort of digital profile. Talk about data breach and overreaching. I mean, this is an overreaching episode if we've ever done one. Three stories here about building databases and panopticons for law-abiding citizens. Who and signed up for this?
The Texas story.
Yeah, so I mean, three of them. So we got the Bill C2. Oh, four of them, C18, yeah. C2, this, and the Texas story. Yeah, four of them. Yeah. You're right. Yeah,
that's it. And you know what? We'll end it on this. It's not as lighthearted as the other ones, but it's at least it's a change of pace. And a company called Vanta, never heard of Vanta before. But
You know what Vanta is?
No.
Vanta is like, if you ever Google Vanta Black, it's a color that's, I think, very difficult to reproduce. You'd probably call it a Pantone color. And if you look at it, it absorbs Len more light than any other color. So when you look at it, it looks like it's not there. Like it's a gap in the image that you're looking at, even when you see it in person. It's wild to see.
But it can only be seen in person, right? It's not something you can replicate on a telephone, on a phone or a...
You can see it on a phone screen. Like if you look up Vanta Black, it's all one word.
Okay, I wasn't aware that it
could replicate. We're going to do the first ever screen share on Access of Easy. So I'll show you what it looks like. It's rather crazy. So, you know, who knows if this company got this from...
Now, this is all contingent on my screen replaying or playing it correctly.
That's how dark it is.
Yeah, very interesting.
That's wild, eh? So it like takes, it absorbs all the light possible. Or is it absorbs or rejects? Not sure. But anyway, there you go. So that's... So
black absorbs and white reflects.
Is that how it works?
That's why black, it gets hotter because it absorbs the light.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. There you go. Anyway, so that's a little bit of Vanta background for you. Continue,
please,
sir.
Well, that's what Vanta is, but in terms of the color, but the company, as per Google, it's a trust management platform, and they help organizations simplify and centralize compliance and security. So they're doing monitoring of security controls and crap like that. So it seems like a fairly important company. They actually have a lot of business, not publicly traded, by the way. And so the stuff they do is pretty serious, but it gets even more serious when you look at this because they experienced a code bug that led to a data leak. And
this is a weird leak too. Yeah.
And it exposed that customer data to other clients. And this was done, or at least identified on May 26, and they attributed to a recent modification to the company's product. And so with respect to what was released or shared was company employee data, account setup details, two-factor identification configurations, crap like that. They say less than 4% of their customer base was impacted. But if you do the math, that's still a lot of businesses out there that were kind of reminds me of the Coinbase hack.
Yeah.
Or it was a 1%. In reality, it seemed like it's a lot higher.
Yeah.
Anyways, Vanta confirms this wasn't a cyber attack, but just an internal coding flaw. I'm not sure if that's going to appease people or make them any happier. Like it is what it is. It's just maybe they're crappy coding. They should be contacting that Indian guy that has all those Indians working. Or maybe you could send them over. They need some business. Anyways, so not much else to say about this. You know, it sucks if you're a Vanta a customer and you're one of the 4% that were impacted.
Does suck, doesn't it?
But you know, the good news is at least information that was leaked is probably going to be captured by Palantir. And if it's not going to be captured by Palantir, Bill C2 is going to capture it.
We're going to find out who was online accessing these data leaks.
Texas Bill will get it. It's beautiful. It's somewhere it's going to be captured.
Not much to add, except again, the sort of side note here, this leak impacted a little less than 20% of Vanta's third-party integrations. Third-party integrations have proven to be an Achilles heel for a lot of companies that are doing data management and privacy stuff.
This is why we like Bull.
Yeah, you know, like it's
everything in house.
It's hard to justify at this point. You know, we talk about this a lot from the Bitcoin wallet side. Like, you don't want a Bitcoin wallet that does everything else, does like DeFi and yield or whatever. Even if you like those products, which, you know, you probably shouldn't at this point, but if you did, it's just more surface area for problems. And yet again, you got wide surface area, increased likelihood of issues, and more issues to report. I mean, 4%, come on. Do we really think it's only 4%? I guess we'll find out in 2 weeks when we revisit this story.
4% too many.
Exactly. 4% too many. Great way to put it. On that note, we are out of here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Keep your head up, everybody. It seems bleak, but the sun will come up tomorrow, so don't worry too much about it. Until next time, for more, you can always... sign up for the newsletter, sign up for the podcast, and we'll see you next time. Take care.